Hello and welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Thanks for being with us. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest this hour, Jimmy Akin, senior apologist here at Catholic Answers, and it's open forum. You can ask whatever you like. 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. Hi, Jimmy Akin.
Hi, Cy Kellett. How are you doing?
I am doing very well, thank you. Also proprietor of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. What's tomorrow? Oh, tomorrow. I think I remember. This is
Let's see how well you do.
This is a best of tomorrow. You can do a best of,
so to speak. Oh. Not exactly. A best of is typically just a replay of stuff you've already seen, you know, like heard.
Oh,
like
yeah,
a clip
right.
show.
Right. Like a bottle episode.
Well, a bottle episode and a clip show are two different things.
Oh, okay.
We can talk about that in a minute.
Okay.
This is an updates show. So we've covered a lot of mysteries. It's our 150th episode. So it's a kind of anniversary episode. We've covered lots of mysteries before, and there's always new stuff coming out. There's new stuff to learn. There's new research being done. And so we're going to, for our 150th episode, update people on what we've learned since the original episodes aired. So we're going to be talking about updates on Bigfoot, updates on the Great Pyramid of Egypt, updates on the JFK assassination, updates on UFOs, and all kinds of other things.
Oh, very, very good. Okay, so that's better than a clip show. All right, so
yeah.
I only know about a bottle episode because of...
I showed you one?
The one on
Community.
Community, yeah, the TV show Community.
Yeah.
So did a thing about a bottle episode. It was like a TV show that was aware that it was a TV show, but only a little bit aware.
Sort of.
Yeah, it was very clever.
Yeah. So Community is a sitcom that's very meta about a community college, and one of the students at the community college is convinced he's on a TV show, and he views everything in his life in terms of it being on a TV show. And in one episode, he's afraid they're going to be doing a bottle episode. A bottle episode is a term that they use in the television industry to refer to an episode that takes place entirely on existing sets. This is a cost-saving measure, so they don't have to build new sets or go on location. You just keep all your characters on a main set. You saw this a lot in Star Trek, the original series, where you'd have episodes set entirely on the Enterprise.
Yeah.
So those are bottle episodes because it's like a ship in a bottle. And they did indeed do a Community episode that was a bottle episode where the whole thing is set in the school library on one set.
Yeah.
They also did a clip show. A clip show is where you take clips from previous episodes and you have characters sitting around remembering events from previous episodes, sometimes with a little lame plot to string the clips together. This is another cost-saving measure in the television industry, but since Community is so meta, when they did their clip show, all of the clips were footage we had never seen before. So they're remembering events
funny.
We've never seen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember it from Happy Days. Every year, Happy Days would do at least one clip show where we're all sitting around. Remember the time that Richie and then something like, I guess that saves a lot of money and you get another program out of it.
Yeah, and it's inferior television.
Yeah,
unless it's all new clips.
But this is not a bottle episode. It is when Jimmy Akin's here. This is not a bottle. This is top flight stuff. Your calls welcome. 888-318-7884. We'll start in Washington State, watching on YouTube Live. Isaac, go ahead with your question for Jimmy Akin. You know what? You're gonna have to push the button for me. There's something wrong over here. All right, Isaac, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've got a question. I'm a college student right now, and a lot of my peers are very excited about the COVID vaccine, and I understand that, but I'm also I'm also worried because I'm not entirely – I know there's a lot of debate about the morality of it and of if it's safe long-term. Like, it's kind of a scary idea about the long-term effects, so I'm not really sure how to think about it well, and I'm wondering if I could maybe get some data from that.
Okay. So are you asking about it from a moral point of view or a scientific safety point of view or both?
I'm both.
Okay. So let's deal with the scientific question first. Now, this is a matter that doesn't really engage church teaching. You know, whether a vaccine is safe and effective is something that has to be judged scientifically. And because the internet is the internet, there are always going to be people on, you know, proclaiming everything about the vaccine. You'll find some people who will say it's super effective. You'll find other people say it's not effective at all. You'll find some people who will say it's safe, totally, totally. You'll find other people saying it's totally, totally unsafe. And so you have to be careful when you're on the internet and, you know, use critical thinking and identify reliable sources and cross-examine what those sources are saying. Now, I'm not a medical expert, but I can tell you based on my research, the conclusions that I've come to, it looks like the vaccines that have currently been approved for use are in the main quite effective. The Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, for example, have efficacies of like 95% in preventing infections and even greater efficacy in preventing death. So that's very effective. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine is a little more iffy. Its effectiveness is not quite as high or has not been measured as being quite as high, but it also was tested in a different and much more difficult area. Some of the testing, for example, was done in South Africa during the middle of a COVID surge. And, you know, that can affect the results you get if you're in the middle of a surge. In terms of safety, the history of vaccines is if there are problems, they almost always emerge quickly after a vaccine is given. So you would expect if there's going to be a problem, you would expect 90%+ of the problems to occur within minutes. And that's why they have people stick around after they give them the vaccine. They'll have them stick around for 15 minutes or 30 minutes to see if there's going to be an allergic reaction. Once you get past that 15 to 30 minute mark, it starts dropping off the chance of an adverse reaction. Within a few hours, it's even less likely. Within a few days, it's even less likely. And as you move out into months and years, the chance of an adverse reaction developing is virtually nil. If this vaccine were different than that, and we've already had like 6 months worth of experience with this vaccine, if this vaccine didn't fit that pattern, it would be unprecedented in the history of medicine. You just don't see things cropping up years later. And so with this, you know, sort of vaccine. And so given that we've already had 6 months with it, we have a pretty good idea of the shape of the safety curve. And the safety curve is good. Now, there are adverse reactions. There are people who have allergic reactions. That's rare, but it can happen. And they have ways of treating people when it does happen. So if you get a vaccine and you're in your waiting period for 15 or 30 minutes afterwards and you have an allergic reaction, they've got the workers there trained to deal with that. So they can, you know, give you adrenaline or whatever it may be that you need to help deal with the allergic reaction, or antihistamines, things like that. Longer term, the chances of something happening drop off even more. Recently, there has been some notice of blood clotting in the case of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. And there have been like 6 cases of that in the United States out of 6 million doses of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. So the chances of something like that happening are like 1 in a million. And so you have to make a judgment. What is going to suit your interests better? In this life, we can't avoid all risk. And in fact, if you try to avoid the risk of one thing, you end up accumulating risk for other things. You know, if you are really worried about, well, maybe I'd have one of these 1 in a million reactions, okay, but then you don't get the benefit of the added immunity that you could get to COVID. And so as a result, you have to make a trade-off and say, well, what's more valuable to me given what's likely to happen? The benefit of having the vaccine and the probable immunity it's going to give me, or the chance of one of these one in a million reactions? And that's a judgment that each person needs to make for themselves. In terms of the moral aspect of the question, this is something that the Holy See has addressed. The Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith released a document that was approved by Pope Francis that took the standard principles that have been used in evaluating the morality of vaccines for years and applied them to the current COVID vaccines and said, well, some of these vaccines were developed in ways that were ethically compromised, and Catholics should protest that. And in fact, there are like letters, there are sample form letters that have been written. The USCCB, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, has sample letters on their website that you can get and then, mail off to medical researchers and say, we don't want this kind of thing being done in the future. However, the mere fact that they ethically compromised this stuff to a degree does not mean it can never be used, because every time you interact with other human beings, you're interacting with sinners. And some of those people's actions are tainted by sin. They're ethically compromised, but that doesn't mean you never have anything to do with another person. And so in the judgment of the Holy See, it is legitimate for Catholics to be able to receive the vaccine. That is a moral choice. We need to do what we can to prevent immoral research techniques from being used in the future, but that does not mean that we have to abstain from this vaccine or other vaccines that have been developed using similar techniques, when there are many of them.
Isaac, thank you very much. We've got to head to a break. It's Open Forum. Jimmy Akin is our guest. 888-318-7884 is our number.
Let us help you with your question today on Catholic Answers Live.
The Aquinas Writing Advantage program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
He is honored by the Church as a saint with the title of the Angelic Doctor.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Thomas Aquinas wrote a basic textbook for young theology students that became the Church's most famous guide to the faith, the Summa Theologica. It helped him earn the title Doctor of the Church. He died in 1274.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. My good friend Erica Olson here visiting. Hi, Erica.
Hi, how are you?
I'm really good. Father David McConey did a very fine retreat yesterday, didn't he?
He did. Oh, my gosh.
Did you come out of there feeling...
Can I tell you, I cried like four times yesterday.
Really?
All through the retreat, yeah.
And not because it was bad.
No, it was just so filling.
Yeah, he does a beautiful job.
He does a beautiful job. It just filled me. It's like, I didn't know how much I needed a spiritual
retreat. Oh, isn't that something? Yeah, right.
Until I was like in the moment and I was there, and it just blew me away.
Yeah.
So it's a coincidence that you talk about the retreat, or that you ask me about the retreat, because I'm here to talk about Society 315.
Yes.
Our new club for donors. And we have a special perk coming up for donors. So if you join Society 315. This is an exclusive perk for members, so you're going to want to join. We've filmed this staff retreat. It was exclusive to the staff. There's no other place that you're going to find these talks, but we're going to send you the videos.
Oh, we're going to share them.
We're going to share them with members.
What if they're already a member of Society? Like, you're
if
not
you're
just...
already a member, you're going to get these videos.
Okay.
Yes.
Because I want to show them to my wife.
But if you want to get these videos and you're not a member yet, you're going to want to join
in
the next week or so.
CA Society 315.
CASociety315.com.
Yep.
To join. All the details are there about membership. If you're already a donor, This is the Society 315.
You don't have to become a new donor.
Monthly online donors.
Yeah.
So this is an exclusive club for monthly online donors. If you are already a monthly online donor, you don't have to resubscribe or, you know, give another donation. All you have to do is contact us at society315@catholic.com. That's our email,
yeah.
society315@catholic.com. And talk to or send us an email saying you're already a donor, you want to join the society, we'll get you hooked up, and you will also qualify for those talks. Details about what membership is and how you join are on the website, so go check that out before asking us questions. There's all the details on there.
CASociety315.com.
When you join, you're going to get an exclusive welcome membership box that includes this T-shirt that I'm wearing with our exclusive Society logo.
Own. It won't be.
It won't be my used one. No, it's mine's a little bit smelly. But
well, you cried four times yesterday.
I did. It was very emotional.
I don't know why that would make it smelly, but all right. But that I thought, what a great idea that we want to have this society where people are more intimately connected, really, with what we do here. And and Chris Check, our president, gets these wonderful retreat leaders. Just let people be part of our retreat.
Yeah. And well, the retreat was led by Father David McConey, who was just your guest, right?
Yeah,
on the first hour.
Yeah.
So if you loved him on that first hour.
Oh, no, he was terrible.
Was he terrible? He's never terrible.
No,
I don't believe
good.
You because
yeah.
everything he does is just
yeah.
outstanding. So if you liked him in the first hour, if you've heard him before, you know you're going to get a quality series of talks. It's three talks for our retreat. You're going to get all three videos if you join the society in the next week or so. We give out perks like this to society members on a pretty regular basis. This is exclusive content that's only going out to members. There's also exclusive member benefits that you get at our conferences. For instance, we're going to be holding socials for our members. So there's a lot of ongoing benefits that you're going to be able to partake in if you become a member.
Don't say conference.
Why are you laughing? I'm not allowed to talk about the conference.
You're not supposed to talk about the conference because we don't know if we can have it.
I know. I told you.
CASociety315.com.
We're hopeful. Yes.
Erica Olson, thanks for coming in and talk about us. Erica is the, I'm sorry, I was trying to say two things at once. Erica is the events coordinator here at Catholic Answers. But
that's right.
You've taken on a whole bunch of other stuff since.
I have, which is why I'm talking
no
to you
events.
About society.
Thanks, Erica.
Thank you, Si.
CASociety315.com. It's open forum. Jimmy Akin is our guest. 888-318-7884 is the number. And we go now to an anonymous caller. Anonymous, thank you for waiting patiently. Go ahead with your question for Jimmy. Anonymous?
I guess. Can you hear me?
Yeah. You're there. Go ahead.
Oh, good. I guess the heart of my question would be, how can I get an appointment with my bishop? Because I think that might be the solution to my dilemma. So first, the problem is that I got married in another country, and that country has a law that you have to have a civil marriage before you can get married in the Catholic Church. And what happened was they didn't want to marry us because my husband isn't a Catholic. And, I told them, you can't make up your own rules, but they did. This is, in another country.
Anonymous, just real quick, you yourself are a Catholic?
Yeah, my husband's not. And,
okay.
Anyway, he since then has decided he doesn't want to marry me in the church. And I always thought that we were going to get married in the church. And I wanted to ask if I could, I wanted to see if I could have an appointment with the bishop, because then I could maybe get it like a dispensation for going to Holy Communion.
Well, let's ask Jimmy about that. Is that how you would deal with this, Jimmy, or how would you deal with this situation?
So if you're living with someone and you're, you being a Catholic, you need to be married to the person either in the Catholic Church or have a dispensation in order to have a non-Catholic marriage. If that hasn't happened, then you are not able to live in a normal married fashion with this person, because you're only married in the eyes of the civil law. And if you're not living as brother and sister, then you shouldn't be receiving communion. And the solution would be to address the marital situation. This would be the obvious and best solution. There are a number of ways of doing it. Assuming that you love this man and want to remain married to him, you could approach him and say, look, I know that this may not mean much to you, but it really means a lot to me to be able to be married in the church. And I'd ask you, if you love me, to be open to getting married in the Catholic Church. It doesn't mean you're a Catholic. It doesn't mean you approve of the Catholic Church. It's something that you would be doing because of your love for me and my need to honor my conscience by getting married in my church. Another possibility would be to get a new marriage, but one that you have a dispensation for. So you could say, look, if he doesn't agree to the first proposal that I just made, you could say, well, then can we have a non-Catholic wedding? Can we reaffirm our love for each other, let's say, in a Protestant church? And I can get a dispensation in order to do that. And then that would be a possibility, and that would also take care of the situation. In most of these kind of situations, you wouldn't need to involve the bishop personally. Instead, you would just talk to your local pastor, and he would be the one, typically, or someone at the parish that he assigns to do this would, you know, be the one to file the paperwork with the diocese and help get the paperwork filed and things like that. So normally you'd work through him. If it became necessary to involve the bishop, that can certainly happen. And one can always, you know, call the chancery and ask for an appointment with a bishop. But typically, this wouldn't be handled in that way. It would be handled in one of the two ways I just mentioned.
Anonymous, I hope that is helpful to you. Thank you so much for that call. We have lots of folks on the line. I'm going to keep going. Jimmy Akin, our guest, and we go now to Canada. Paolo in Canada, listening on the EWTN app. Paolo, go ahead with your question.
Oh, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. Now, Jimmy, since you said that you like weird questions, I heard you say that several weeks ago. Here's one of them.
Okay.
If ever there would be a research station on Mars, like, I don't want to go so far as a human settlement, but still, what calendar would they use then to celebrate church days? Because the Martian sol is about half an hour longer than the Earth day, and which means the calendars would soon be out of sync. And how do you know how to celebrate Christmas or Easter any other planet?
It's a great question, Paolo. Jimmy, what are we going to do?
This is one I've thought about before and addressed before, so it's one that doesn't have a single answer. Now, if we have an initial human presence on Mars, just like we have had on the moon and on the International Space Station and on Skylab and things like that, initial human colonies or initial human off-world presences are still very dependent on Earth. And so, at least in the beginning, they would continue to use the standard Earth calendar. And they would be synced to a 24-hour day. It's something, we see that when we send astronauts to the moon. We've seen that when we send astronauts to the International Space Station. They might use something like Greenwich Mean Time to govern, you know, the local time, or they might use the time zone of the area they launched from or something like that. Now, once you have people on Mars, it's going to be a little bit different because you have a slightly different length of the day. And so people would begin accommodating themselves to the different length of the day, but you would still probably have record keeping and stuff like that done in sync with Earth. So the difference in the length of the Martian day is not so dramatically different that it would force people into a radically different schedule. The Martian days would progressively, you might have local Martian time that is different than Earth time, that's calibrated based on the local sunrise and sunset. But then in terms of what day is it on the calendar, that's probably still going to be judged by the Gregorian calendar in use on Earth. And so Christians on Mars would be celebrating Christmas twice a year, potentially, per Martian year, because the Martian year is twice as long. Further out, a different calendar might develop, but that's what would happen in the beginning.
Paolo, thank you very much for that weird question for Jimmy Akin. We'll be right back with more open forum for Jimmy Akin. Our number, 888-318-7884.
We're here for you. Call now. Catholic Answers Live.
Bishop Joseph Strickland of Tyler, Texas, is one of the most courageous leaders in the church, known for his outspoken support of unborn life, Orthodox faith and morals, and reforming Catholic institutions. In his groundbreaking new book, Light and Leaven, he offers a forthright perspective on the state of the church today and calls on the lay faithful to meet its challenges boldly, touching on topics including parish renewal, the centrality of the Eucharist, the need for prayer and silence in a noisy and distracted age, and the battle between good and evil in the church and world. Bishop Strickland's wise insights and evident love for souls will inspire and edify you. To order your copy of Light and Leaven, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
To many people, even many Christians, purgatory is a fantasy, or worse, a wicked lie invented by the church to make salvation complicated and keep people in fear. But I'm here to tell you that purgatory is fact, not fiction. The Bible supports it, Christians have historically believed in it, and it makes theological sense. In my new book, Purgatory is for Real, I provide the evidence and reasoning to help you understand this controversial doctrine and demonstrate how it's actually a joyful, hopeful reality, not something shadowy and mysterious, but a sign of God's love and mercy. To get your copy of Purgatory is for Real, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Thanks, Sarah. A little bit of groovy music. Always makes me feel good. Always makes me feel good. Jimmy Akin, groovy music, open forum. Those three things together make me feel good. Thanks for playing that, Sarah. It makes me miss Nick a little less. Jimmy Akin, our guest, senior apologist here at Catholic Answers, the proprietor of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. You can call and ask him whatever you like, 888-318-7884. Lisa in Pennsylvania, listening on the new and improved Catholic Answers Live app. You are next, Lisa. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you for taking my phone call. My question is, how does one, I was listening to a program when they talked about the spiritual works of mercy, one of them being admonish the sinner. How does one do that without sounding rude or offending the person, but expressing concern? An example I have are twofold. One was a family member who, one of both baptized Catholic, one had been previously married, and they got married outside of the church because the annulment process hadn't started. They had spoken to priests. I don't know if the priest had, that was interesting for me to hear that the priest can file the paperwork with the bishop. I do not know if they did that, but I expressed surprise that they were proceeding that direction, and that did not go over very well. And then more recently, I have a friend who's one of their children, adult children, is married two baptized, married outside of the church, and more recently want to have children. They've been married for a few years, so they talked to a priest, and they said, oh, that's not a problem. We will convalidate the marriage. Mm-hmm. To my knowledge, they're what she did not share, that they said, well, now they need to live as brother and sister. Is that any of my business? Am I supposed to say something? Or
Yeah. Since it's a work of mercy to admonish the sinner. Yeah. So these are tough ones to decide.
It depends on your relationship with the person. We have different levels of responsibility to different people, and it also depends on our station in life. A priest, for example, has more of a responsibility to admonish the sinner than an ordinary layperson does. An ordinary layperson has more of a responsibility to admonish a sinner if they are responsible for that person in some way, like a parent with a child has more responsibility to correct the child's behavior than just about anybody else would. And so when you're dealing with a situation like this, you have to think about a variety of factors, including, who am I? How well will I be able to do this? And how will the person respond? And what is my relationship to this person? And there's no one-size-fits-all answer here. It is a judgment call that involves the exercise of prudential judgment. And so the thing to do is think about the situation. In terms of responsibility, think about who you are, who the other person is, and the kind of relationship you have. But then also think about the practicalities of the situation. Will you be able to communicate with the person in a way that is likely to help them grow closer to God? Or would they react in such a way that attempting to communicate with them about this matter would push them further away from God? And that is something that's going to depend on your knowledge of them and your knowledge of yourself and how the two of you relate and communicate. And again, it involves a prudential judgment call that one just has to think about and meditate about and pray about and then make the best decision you can and trust God with the results. So there's not a one-size-fits-all answer. In terms of how to communicate these things in a way that is more productive and less off-putting, it's often good to, number one, rehearse it all in your head ahead of time and think through, well, if I say it this way, how will they react? If I say it that way, how will they react? But it's good to try to maintain a helpful tone and to present the positives of how it will help this person in order to do what they need to do, what the benefits are of taking care of their marital situation, for example, or whatever the particular case may be, because ultimately God gives us his law for our happiness. That's the ultimate reason for the law. It's not that God is just a control freak and wants to control our behavior. God gives us his law because by obeying his law, we will be happier. The law that he gives us is based on human nature. And you can see that, for example, in the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not commit murder, thou shalt not commit adultery, you don't lie, things like that. Imagine how much better the world would be if nobody ever killed, lied, or committed adultery. People would be a lot happier, and that's the ultimate function of the law. It's not to kill people's fun or limit their freedom. It's to unlock their ability to flourish and be happy by living in accord with human nature. And so to the extent you can, you want to present the positive side of the situation. Now, that doesn't mean that you never discuss the negative side. Because if you're living out of harmony with human nature, that's going to cause problems. That's going to cause unhappiness. And sometimes warning people about the problems they're going to encounter, including in the next life. Because if you live this life turning your back on God and the law he built into your nature, then you're making a decision against God, and that's going to haunt you because God's, if you've said, I don't want to have anything to do with God and his life, or his law in this life, well, God's not going to force himself on you in the next. He's going to respect your decision to not be with him. And so there are eternal consequences to the actions we have in this life. It's usually not the most productive strategy to begin by talking about those, but it can be necessary at times to go exactly there. So once again, it's a matter of prudence, but you think about it, you pray about it, you game it out in your head to figure out what's the most productive strategy going to be, how can I best help this person, and then you make your best judgment call and trust God with the results.
Thanks, Lisa. I hope that that was helpful to you. Hey, we got a line open, 888-318-7884. Jimmy Akin is our guest. He's senior apologist here at Catholic Answers. Actually, a couple lines open now, so we don't usually see that when Jimmy's here, so I'm just telling you that so you can dial. If you've got a question you've been saving up for to ask Jimmy sometime, now's your chance. 888-318-7884. Let's go to Wendy in St. Paul, Minnesota, watching on Facebook Live. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Go ahead with your question.
Good,
for Jimmy.
Thanks for taking my call.
Happy
my
to.
Question concerns Matthew 6:6 and a little bit of the backstory. I grew up Protestant, and I would ask my father why we didn't go to church, and he would always throw Matthew 6:6 at me. We don't have to go to church. All you have to do is go into your closet and pray, and that's worship. So I became a Catholic 22 years ago, and throughout the years, every once in a while, I'll ask him to come to church just to kind of show him the Catholic Church, and he throws this at me every single time, and I'm curious what response I could give him to refute this, to get him to maybe be open to coming to church and getting him in there.
Okay. Well, in order, how you put it across to your dad is going to depend on your relationship with him and what he'll respond to. You know him better than I do, so you know you have to make that determination for yourself. But in terms of the biblical data, if he's giving you a Bible verse to justify not going to church, then it would be logical to give him Bible verses that do justify going to church. And there are Bible verses that do that. An example is found in Hebrews chapter 10, leading up to verse 25, which is the kind of the key verse. But if you back up a couple of verses to get it in context, the author is writing and he says, "Let us hold fast to the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. And let us consider how to stir one another up to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some." And so we've got a direct exhortation here to not neglect to meet together. And some people do that, the author acknowledges, but he says we shouldn't do that. We should not neglect to meet together. Instead, we need to meet together to stir one another as Christians up to love and good works. And so he's obviously not talking here about meeting together as families, because families always meet together. You don't need to exhort people to go home at the end of the day. He's talking in a context about meeting together as Christians. And so that's an example of a Bible passage that that supports meeting together in church. There also are passages that talk about things like respect those who are over you in the Lord. And that implies there is a structure to Christ's church. There are some people who have pastoral care of other people. That's why they're called pastors. Shepherds is, you know, the meaning of that term. And that implies that some are shepherds and some are sheep. And it's not right for the sheep to just go off on their own and say, well, I don't need to be part of the flock. I don't need a shepherd. I don't need any kind of guidance. I'm just going to go pray in my closet. So these exhortations to respect those who are over you in the Lord indicates that there is a structure to the church, that God meant his people to be structured with a hierarchy in that way, and that we're not meant to just go off on our own. Another passage that you might want to look at that makes this point And there's actually a couple. One of them is Romans 12. The other is 1 Corinthians 12 through 14, where Paul talks about the church as the body of Christ and how each member of the body of Christ has a gift that is given for the benefit of everybody. And if you are just staying in your closet and praying, then you are not using your gift to help other people, and you're not receiving the benefit of their gifts. So you're depriving yourself and other people of the benefit that the Holy Spirit meant you to have by living the Christian life and giving you and other members of the Christian community spiritual gifts.
Wendy, I think that's an awful lot to chew on. I hope that that will be helpful in your conversations with your father. Thank you very much for your call, Wendy, but we got to take a quick break. Jimmy Akin, our guest, open forum, 888-318-7884, the number. And the spring sale continues over at shop.catholic.com. 10 to 25% off, in some cases more than 25% off. Right now you can visit shop.catholic.com and get your savings.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Go forth and preach the good news. It's not just a suggestion. If you want to take more seriously the command of Jesus to share the gospel with those around you, consider joining St. Paul Street Evangelization. It's a grassroots organization that brings the Catholic faith to the streets in a non-confrontational way. Visit our website, www.streetevangelization.com, to learn more. And don't forget to like us on Facebook. It's time to do our part.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
Isn't it awesome that we today do not recognize His presence in the Eucharist? Is it because we really don't go to Him in humbleness of heart and say, Lord, I don't believe, help my unbelief. Lord, I want to see You. I want to recognize You. I cannot live without You. Are we saying that?
EWTN, live truth, live Catholic.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Jimmy Akin, our guest. Lines all filled up. Lots of folks with questions. Jimmy, next we go to Westmont, Illinois. Noah, watching on YouTube Live. Noah, go ahead with your question for Jimmy.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. So I've watched an interview lately with John MacArthur and Ben Shapiro. It's kind of a popular interview online. I don't know if you've seen it. John MacArthur, when he was talking about the Catholic Church, was talking about how essentially the Catholic Church's role in politics was what led in one way or another to the Dark Ages. Like, they were told, you know, super domineering in their reign and didn't let anyone have freedom to, like, have any commerce and like, they were manipulative in their power. And, you know, so, like, the Church should never be involved in politics. And ultimately, like, the Protestant Reformation was what freed people from that. And it was like, when the Reformation happened, every region that followed Protestantism, like, was suddenly flourishing or something. And everywhere that was covered by Catholicism still was just still in the Dark Ages until they started to catch on. I was wondering, how true is it that the Catholic Church was responsible for that? And if it's not true, why is that a misconception?
So this is basically a cartoon version of history. This is not reflective of what actually happened. And this kind of presentation is not taken seriously by competent scholars today. Where it came from is a couple of things. Number one of them is when the Protestant Reformation started, of course, the reformers broke away from the Catholic Church, and there was enmity between the reformers and the Catholic Church. And so they didn't like each other. And whenever you don't like someone, you want to justify that to people. And so it's in your interest to try to paint yourself as the good guys who are doing the heroic liberation and your opponents, the people you don't like, as nasty oppressors. And you see that constantly. You see that, you know, even today in situations whenever you have one group of people come in and do, let's say, a military conquest of a particular area, they always portray themselves as liberators. You know, when back in the 1990s, when Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait and took it over, they portrayed themselves as liberating Kuwait when what they really were doing was conquering it. And so there is a natural human tendency towards self-justification and towards vilifying the people that you're in contention with. And so after the advent of the Protestant Reformation, you would have a lot of Protestants who would try to vilify the Catholic Church and portray the time period before the rise of the Reformation as bad, as a bad period, and blame it on the Catholic Church. Then you had another movement began that's known as the Enlightenment. And the Enlightenment is, you could have religious people in the Enlightenment. They were people who were sometimes called deists. They believed that there would be a God, but that he didn't really involve himself in the world. Or they might reject the existence of God altogether, or they might say, I don't really know if there is a God. But they distanced themselves from classical Christianity, and so they didn't like either the Protestant Reformation or the Catholic Church. And so they also were interested in vilifying the religious establishments of their day and the prior ages. And that's really where the idea comes from that the Middle Ages were dark. This is a metaphor that's used to convey the idea that in the Middle Ages, there was an extreme lack of knowledge and that people were not, say, interested in science or things like that. And that's simply not true. If you listen to histories of science or read histories of science, actually the Middle Ages were a period of enormous creativity. Now, they didn't have modern science, but they were very interested in it. And it was, in fact, the priestly classes in Europe that were the leaders. Scientifically, they were the people who were the most interested in science. I'd like to recommend a couple of things that you could use to research that. One of them is a book called The Light Ages: The Surprising Story of Medieval Science. It focuses in particular on a particular British monk before the Reformation who was very interested in astronomy. His name was John Warwick, if I recall correctly, or John Westwick. And The Light Ages is a fascinating look at just how scientifically interested people were in the Middle Ages. Also, The Great Courses has a course on the history of science. They actually have a couple. The one you want for this purpose is The History of Science, Antiquity to 1700. And you can get that as an audiobook or watch it as a video series, I think. But it is really, really well done and points out just how intellectually curious and investigative people were in the Middle Ages, not just in the Christian world, but in the Muslim world as well. And so I'd recommend those. In terms of some of the other things that John MacArthur, who is not favorable towards Catholics, in terms of some of the other things he mentioned, like economic liberty and so forth, actually capitalism was invented in Italy in the Renaissance era. And so actually the ideas behind modern capitalism are traced to a Catholic source. And you might want to check out books like How the Catholic Church Saved Western Civilization and things like that to get the other side of the story.
Okay, Noah?
Yeah, thanks so much. Is there some kind of evidence that people usually point to who like make this claim that that you would recommend like specifically trying to look for how to defend?
Well,
I guess
it's a very long period of time, so it's
I'd have to know specifics and be in order of what specific claim. I mean, you mentioned several claims, and I kind of gave you a sketch there. If there are others, then I would I'd be happy to research him, but I need to know about him first.
Try those sources, Noah, and call us back, and we'll continue to talk about it because it's a kind of a propaganda piece that continues to this day. Let's go to Keith in Bellevue, Nebraska, listening on Spirit Catholic Radio. Keith, your question for Jimmy.
Hello. Well, obviously, there's a lot of concerns what's going on in the church today with modernism, what the German bishops are up to with their troubles and the Jesuits and the Freemasons and so forth. But, Jimmy, what's the Catholic definition of apostasy or being an apostate? Is it entirely a Baptist Catholic rejecting the Catholic faith, or could you be one like if you reject certain teachings that Catholics have to believe in, like purgatory, hell, divorce, sodomy?
Okay, so the term apostasy has a very specific meaning. It's defined in the Code of Canon Law, and you can find the same definition in the Catechism of the Catholic Church. Apostasy is the total repudiation of the Christian faith. So it is not enough if someone rejects particular teachings or even particular dogmas to make one an apostate. If you're rejecting a dogma and you're doing so under certain conditions, that qualifies as heresy, but not apostasy. In order to be an apostate, you have to say, I am no longer a Christian. And that's what an apostate is. It's someone who used to be a Christian, but who has now totally repudiated the Christian faith.
You know what? I just want to, maybe we'll send you a book. It's called Teaching with Authority. It's by our guest, Jimmy Akin, Teaching with Authority, How to Cut Through Doctrinal Confusion and Understand What the Church Really Says, which gives a great deal of information on these kinds of subjects and I think might be helpful to you. So if you hang on the line, we can send that to Nebraska. Hang on, Keith, and we'll send that to you. Excuse me, that was Noah. No, that was Keith. All right, going to go to Southern Illinois now. And Mike, listening on Covenant Radio, you are next, Mike. Go ahead with your question for Jimmy Akin.
I am a fan of your mysterious world, and I'm hoping you do a subject on, I hope this is on your list, but I'm going to cut to the quick, and what's your bottom line on what Source Q is?
Oh, Source okay. Q.
Okay. So Q is a, for folks who may not be aware, Q is a hypothetical source that has been proposed to explain certain verses that are in both Matthew and Luke. There are about 235 verses that are paralleled in Matthew and Luke, and there are enough of them that some people have proposed, okay, maybe Matthew and Luke are drawing on a common source. And since the German word for source is Quelle, that has become called the Q source. Now, the Q source is possible. Some people are kind of threatened by the idea, like this is somehow a challenge to the authority of the Gospels, but it's really not. We know the Gospel authors had sources, and this is just one possible proposed source. Some scholars treat Q as if it's a given that it exists. I don't buy that either. I don't think it's a given. I think there are other ways you can explain those 235 verses, like maybe Matthew wrote first and Luke used Matthew as one of his sources, and he took those 235 verses from Matthew, in which case you don't need a separate source. Or reverse it, which is what I think is the most likely view, that Luke wrote first, and then Matthew took the 235 verses from Luke. So you don't need Q as a source once again. But whether there was a Q source or whether Luke copied from Matthew or Matthew copied from Luke, there are multiple ways to explain how these verses ended up. And there are other ways too. But there are multiple ways to explain how these verses ended up in Matthew and Luke. And we don't need to be dogmatic about one particular view. So I think Q is an interesting idea, but personally I'm skeptical of it. I tend to favor the idea that Matthew used Luke.
Is it the kind of thing that you might do sometime on Jimmy Akin's Mysterious
oh,
World?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I've got it on the list.
But there Along are 1,499 other items on yeah. that list. Tomorrow, the 150th episode of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. drops.
That's right. And Bible questions for 2 hours here on Catholic Answers Live.
Oh, great, Jimmy. That's right. Jimmy will be back tomorrow, and we'll do 2 hours of your Bible questions. If you've got a Bible question, whether it's about things that you find in the Bible or about, as that call was just there, about how the Bible was assembled, who the people were who wrote it, how did it come to its final form that we have now? Is it in its final form? All those kind of Bible questions welcome. Jimmy, thanks very much for Open Forum. See you for 2 hours of Bible tomorrow.
My pleasure.
We'll see you then, God willing. Catholic Answers Live.